Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Je suis venu vous parler d'Europe.
Und es ist ein guter Tag für Europa.
Europas Rolle i verden bliver stadig vigtigere.
We have our freedom in our hands.
Du lytter til Altingets Europa-podcast, sponsoreret af 3F.
Admiral Bléjean, you are the Director General of the EU military staff here in Brussels, but you're also the Director of the Command Center, if I might call it like that, here. What is your job, if you were to describe it in a sort of brief headline? What is it you do?
Okay, so as you mentioned, I have two hats. The first is being Director General of the EU military staff, and in that capacity, I'm providing the military expertise with my staff, strong of 200 people from all the member states to all the EU institutions. In my second hat, I'm the director, it's a kind of barbarian name, of the military planning and conduct capability. It's the embryo of the operational headquarters in Brussels. And in that capacity, I'm especially today the mission commander of all the EU training missions.
So you do the planning and the day-to-day running of these operations in Africa?
Yeah, absolutely. We have four training missions in Africa, in Mali, Sahel, Central African Republic, Somalia, and Mozambique. We do the conduct, we do the planning. I have force commanders on the ground, and I give them orders and directive and guidance.
What is the reason for the EU to do this? Why does the EU need to have these operations? Why do we need to have an EU defense policy?
Well, we established the EU in the history without any defense policy, without any military chromosome, I would say. That was after World War II, never that again. So we push away those dealing with war and so on. We started, in fact, to consider to have a real policy 20 years ago, and then it got traction until maybe 3-4 years ago. And the reason is that EU took conscious that there are no power, a collective power, and they should have the means and capabilities also to address and to defend and secure their strategic interests collectively.
What kind of military tasks do you do? You mentioned training missions, for instance, in Africa.
So those missions are to support the armed forces of some partner nations, and it's integrated approach. So that means it's along with civilian missions, it's along with development tools held by the Commission, for instance. And we have also three operations in Med, Irini, in Indian Ocean against the piracy, Atalanta, and in Bosnia and Herzegovina, Althea operation. So that's all serving the interest of the European Union as collective body.
But some people, question some people ask is, why do we need EU defense when we've got NATO? Isn't that what we've got NATO for?
Well, we have two different fields of responsibility. NATO is for collective defense. NATO is to secure the integrity, the territorial integrity of all the allied nations. EU, for the defense and security, is acting outside of the borders. So we are not in charge of the defense, of the collective defense. That's NATO. And whoever are part from NATO and EU, we know have 21 member states who are also NATO nations, they are embedded within that collective defense. But we have to defend our interests, to secure stability in some other areas like Africa, which are important for the security of the European Union.
But the EU defense policy is not about territorial defense of Europe.
No, it's not. And in fact, the common security and defense policy, which has been established by the Lisbon Treaty, forbids to have a mission or operation under the label Common Security and Defense Policy inside the borders of the EU.
Does the EU have a sort of common defense guarantee that could be compared to NATO's Article 5?
Well, yes, there is the existence, and in fact it was established one year before the Article 5, so it was foreseen. That's Article 42.7, which tried to force member states to help others that are aggressed. But it's always a national answer, like in Article 5, by the way. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the EU could decide that now we have to go to war?
Well, EU, it's the member states. So any decision needs to be taken at collective, at consensus, by the 27, 26, no, for the Common Security and Defense Policy, maybe 27 in some times, we'll see. But it's always a consensus, and it's always the member states in the driving seat to decide. So if EU decide to go to war to a country, that means 26 member states have decided to do so.
Okay. Once the decision is made, can a member state be forced? Is there any situation when a member state can be forced to send soldiers to participate in a mission or an operation if that member state does not want to do that?
No, that situation cannot happen. What we do when we have a decision to do a mission or an operation, then we have all the military process to establish operation plan, mission plan, what the personnel are needed, what are the rules of engagement. And then we have a force generation conference where the member states bid or not to participate with such a volume to the operation. But nothing is never mandatory.
So if, for instance, Denmark were to join this defense policy collaboration in the EU, it would never be possible that Denmark could be forced to send troops or military personnel or material or anything?
No, it's not possible. Simply, it's a member state choice. Of course, if Denmark, which I wish personally, joins the Common Security and Defense Policy, that would be a good signal if they are willing and wishing to participate. But there is nothing that can be forced.
Once a mission or an operation has been decided, how does the command structure work? You're a big part of it, of course, yourself, but maybe you could explain a little bit how these forces are commanded.
Yeah, so the three operations are commanded through national headquarters. In fact, two, one Atalanta from Spain, one Irini from Italy.
These are the naval operations you're mentioning.
Yes, the operations against piracy and the operation to implement the embargo against weapons to Libya. And the third one is a particular construct, what we call Berlin Plus. It's NATO acting for the EU with NATO forces. So it's commanded by the vice chief of staff of the operational command of NATO. So those people are equivalent of what I am for the EU training missions. And maybe tomorrow I will be also an operation commander if we decide to do so. And we are reporting to the ambassadors of the Political and Security Council. So those ambassadors represent their member states and they give us collective decisions by consensus to give us directive and guidance to run the operations.
What's the difference between what you call operations and what you call missions?
So it's an old, I would say, an old label. Operations are associated with the word executive and mission non-executive. That means operations are more assertive. They have rules of engagement that can allow us to have sometimes almost, I would say, combat action. The EU training missions are non-executive. That means we don't do operational actions, we don't do combat actions, and we have this framework. And so the main priority, of course, will be the duty of care of the people participating to the missions.
So the way the command system works now, the executive operations are commanded from lead member states.
Yeah, that's correct. But tomorrow, we are looking, after we had adopted this document very important for us called the Strategic Compass, we are looking at the evolution of the command and control structure. So maybe in the future that will be this growing operational headquarters in Brussels that would be leading some operations.
In the Danish debate about EU defense, a debate that's been going on for many, many years now, one of the expressions we keep hearing is there is an EU army. An EU army is coming, or an EU army exists. Does that exist? Is there an EU army? I mean, you should know.
Yeah. Well, I would say yes and no. There is no EU army as such belonging to the EU, belonging to an EU command. The EU army is the sum up of all the member states' armed forces. So they constitute an tool, an operational tool that can serve their national interests, that can serve NATO, that can serve the EU. But the concept of an EU army doesn't exist as such if we are considering that something belongs to the EU as such. EU owns nothing. Member states own things.
So if Denmark becomes a part of this EU defense policy, and if Danish soldiers are sent out to take part in one of them, if Denmark decides to send them out, will you be commanding them, Admiral?
Well, if they are, for instance, deployed in EU training missions, yes, I will receive operational control of these people and I will be their commander.
If an EU army doesn't exist, then maybe we should try and explain the difference between the concept of an EU army and the concept that exists in this strategic compass plan that you mentioned earlier, where the EU is actually talking about creating a sort of rapid deployment force or capacity with up to 5,000 soldiers. Wouldn't that be an EU army?
Where? The wording is very important. Vocabulary is very important. It's not a force, it's a capacity. That means it's not a force of 5,000 people waiting forever to be employed by the EU. It's first creating the willingness from the member states to have the ability in the future, and we are looking at the horizon of 2025, to deploy collectively an operation, maybe in some aggressive, non-permissive environment, strong of 5,000 people. And then associated with that, you have a lot of things. You have the first generation, so who will be providing those people? So it could be the revised concept of the EU battle groups, for instance, could be national, could be also, why not, a kind of coalition of the will under that possibility exists in the treaty. So there are a lot of different ways to generate. So it's not a force in being, it's more a political will that is taking ground on the strategic compass.
Just to make it completely clear, if Denmark were to decide to join the EU defense policy, would we be obliged to take part in this new rapid deployment capacity then?
No, once again, there is no obligation. And so the way we will generate the rapid deployment capacity in order to act, which is more an ambition than anything else, that would be the same concept that I explained for the other operations and missions. At some point, there will be a force generation process where the member states will decide if they want to join or not.
My last question, Admiral, is, does it really matter? Does it matter to you and to the EU whether Denmark becomes a part of this or not?
Well, it does for me personally, because I have the experience of having worked with Denmark within, especially I've been in NATO headquarters, and I know the professionalism and the efficiency of Danish soldiers, and especially when you decide to engage in an operation mission, usually you have no caveat, you do it in very, very efficient manner. So that will certainly bring an added value. Denmark would bring, I would say, an operational mind state in addition to the others.
Altingets EU podcast er sponsoreret.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Der 3F, fordi Danmark fortjener fair journalistik om EU.